Hello, welcome to the Raw Podcast. My name's James Copley, joined by my colleague Phil. Phil, how are you doing?
Yes, well, not bad, thank you. Obviously, yesterday wasn't ideal, but yeah. By the way, I can't get my earphones to work, so apologies to anyone listening if my audio is a little echoey, but we will crack on.
There are many perks to these jobs, but one of the downsides is having to pick the pieces once again of a 5-1 loss at home to Blackburn Rovers. We did it yesterday in the On The Whistle video, which is on YouTube. We're going to do it again now. Have you any extra thoughts to add, Phil? Have you managed to think about the game in any more detail? Because I'm struggling with it.
No, I suppose the initial, anger fades a little bit, doesn't it? And you sort of look at the game through a slightly different lens. But my fundamental thoughts haven't really changed too much. As we said yesterday, Sunderland started okay. Well, that's probably a little bit harsh. They started fairly well, albeit without creating too many chances. But I just thought, as we said yesterday, there was two factors to it for me. One was that all the things we've talked about that have gone wrong in previous months are on show. It's not the first time we've seen a team counterattack way too easily against the Sunderland side that lacks that Corey Evans figure, if you like, that lacks that balance in midfield. I think they're too easy to play against at home. It's too easy to almost telegraph what the opposition are going to do, which is to force Sunderland to almost overplay, overcommit in attacking areas and then just flood them on the break. The other thing I would say is, you know, yesterday was the first time in a long, long time, certainly with this squad of players, I don't think it's anything I've ever said, where I felt like, it seemed like the opposition wanted it a bit more or certainly had a far greater intensity. So that was obviously a disappointing aspect of it. But I think probably the one thing that I thought a little bit more about yesterday was just the fragility of things at the moment in terms of, like, I hope the club's ownership understand how people are feeling at the moment in terms of, while I think people have really enjoyed most of the journey up until this point and have, like, really enjoyed watching this young team, I hope they understand the scale of, like, the apathy that's crept in over the last few months and obviously and also the concern with where the team's heading, because I sometimes I wonder if that's the case. And I think yesterday, you know, the sparse stadium of light, all the empty seats at the end, totally understandable. I can't say I would have been there if I'd, you know, had a ticket. I hope that's sort of ringing a few alarm bells and it's starting to get through, you know, what the scale of the sort of discontent, rightly so, is, because it's been pretty joyless since Christmas. And I don't think that's been dramatic or unfair. I think it's been a fairly joyless experience. And it's not sustainable for that to go on for Sunderland as a championship club. So, yeah, that's probably more where my feeling about why it went wrong yesterday is pretty much the same. But I guess I've more just reflected on, you know, the potential significance of it, really, and the result within the context of what's happened in the last few months.
Just on that wider point, Phil, in terms of how the football club is being run, the strategy, the football strategy, which we all know, we're all familiar by now with the ins and outs of the model. The thing that concerns me is that for the past 18 months, we have been pushing for a little bit of flexibility in this model. But at every turn, at every opportunity, Sunderland appear to have doubled down. Are they going to double down again? Surely they can't. I mean, it's a big summer window coming up. Sunderland are without a head coach. There's that decision to be made. You know, for a club that is wanting to be sustainable and stable under two guys owning it and that have owned it by and large for about 2 years, there's still a lot of instability at the football club as well, which is disappointing.
Yeah, I think that, and I do think it's a factor in terms of what happened yesterday, and that, like, you know, one thing, we always do see stuff through, like, the Sunderland glasses, if you like, Sunderland lens, that's what I'm trying to say. Mm. And obviously, you know, Blackburn are fighting for their lives. There's something very tangible on the line. And I think there is inevitably going to be a drop-off when you've got somebody in charge who, realistically now, we all probably know isn't going to be in charge next season. You're not going up, you're not going down. I suppose there is an element of maybe Blackburn are always going to have that extra yard, if you like, because of the circumstances that they're in. But I think that I agree with you, and I think where a lot of the apathy at the moment comes from and a lot of the concern is that, you know, there hasn't really, as of yet, been a huge amount in the way of accountability or acknowledgement of how badly things have gone wrong. And because of that, we have very little to point us in the direction that things are going to change this summer. And that's a huge factor at the moment. You know, I wrote a column off the back of the Supporter Collective minutes last week about this, and we were all kind of combing through the, through those minutes, looking for like indications that, we can get that right. Oh yeah, we're going to do this bit differently. And there were some aspects of it, you know, recognition that the style of play under Michael Beale had sort of really gone backwards, and that was there were little crumbs of it, but there wasn't really a sort of wholehearted, some of what we're doing hasn't worked and we need to rethink. And I think that's where a huge amount of the apathy and concern at the moment comes from. And the stability is an interesting word, because you could argue that in some aspects there is relative stability. You know, the sporting director's now been in charge for kind of a few years, and that's the most influential footballing figure. I'm aware some people will be listening to that saying, well, maybe that's not a good thing, but you get my point. Like, there is a level of stability. And sometimes in the bigger picture, like, you do see some of the results of that. Like, the academy is clearly in a better place, and like, more players are deciding to stay because they can see a stability, and that means there's a pathway, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, it's not about sort of being overly over the top about it, but I think what's sort of undeniable is that this season has unraveled in a way that it absolutely did not need to. It just did not need to go this way. You know, there were issues in the team through the first half of the season. I'm not trying to rewrite history and say the team's in an amazing place when Tony Mowbray left, but it didn't have to unravel as it did, either in the managerial decisions or that January window, which was there to try and make a few changes. And obviously the positive is that you can look at it and say, well, there's still a lot of talent in the squad. There's still a lot to sort of be positive about moving forward. Good head coach appointments, some good signings. The things can change quickly, and they can. But obviously at the moment, what we don't really have is any sense from the club's ownership specifically, but also Christian Speakman, that's what they're going to do, that they're going to make those necessary changes and build a bit more depth in the squad, maybe show a bit more flexibility in the transfer market. So, yeah, I think it's like, I think yesterday just brought home to me really that we're at a bit of a crossroads here, I think, in terms of this project and the ownership and where things have gone. And I do think, yeah, this summer's like a big moment, I think. And I, if a supporter came to me and said, I don't really understand where this is going, I'm concerned that they don't seem to grasp like how we feel and what's gone wrong and that they're going to change it, I don't think there's a lot where we can say, well, actually, you know, that's wrong, this is what they're going to do, or they've said this or whatever. So it feels like quite an uncertain time at the moment, I would say.
I was talking to Scott Wilson, our colleague from the Northern Echo, a couple of weeks back, and he said something that stuck with us. He said, winning football matches can sort of cover a multitude of sins up. I don't know whether he's nicked that from somebody else, but I'm crediting it to Scott.
Scott has not come up with that, like. No.
Anyway.
That's not yours. But anyway, yeah.
My point is that, you know, I've no doubt if Sunderland were winning football games, the mood would be a little bit better. However, it's not just the football on the pitch that's irking people as well, isn't it? I mean, we've been over this ground a lot, but the commercial side, the Black Cats bar debacle, you know, when you lose 5-1, even on social media, pictures of the flag at the Stadium of Light, which is pretty much ripped in two on a pole. And it has been like that for years. I know Sunderland have announced this sort of investment into the Stadium of Light, and that is objectively good. I think we said that yesterday, but there are just a lot of quite major issues really that surround and feed into this narrative that, you know, actually perhaps, you know, I don't want to say that they don't care or accuse people of that, but maybe that actually they're not doing a good job of running the club. And I think it's unfortunate because, as you mentioned, the academy, and we mentioned it yesterday, I think that is an aspect of the club which is, you know, well run, and we all always wanted that to be well run after the era that preceded it. So it's tough at the moment because it just feels like everything's under the microscope, but rightly so in a way as well.
I think it's fair to say that when the ownership change happened, there was a huge injection of energy, like on and off the pitch.
And general strategy.
Yeah, and I do think it's fair to say that doesn't feel like it's been sustained over the last year. And you raise a relevant point in terms of like, if Sunderland had kept winning games, we'd be talking very differently. But also there's a reason why they haven't kept winning games. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not as if the results have just randomly changed. They had a team that, like, and I go back to this point all the time. People probably sick of me saying it, but we have to do a podcast every week, so, you know, and it's still true. But, like, you know, a data evidence-led operation that, like, had a team that statistically was one of the best performing in the championship, then changed its manager and watched the team get, like, progressively worse, and didn't do the one thing that the statistics were saying they needed to do, which was find somebody to convert the chances. Do you know what I mean? And it's, you're kind of sitting from a distance going, well, that doesn't add up to me. Like, and for a while, so, like, I don't think the off-field operation, I think, has ever really been where it needs to be. But I think there was an energy when they first came in, and you could point to it and say, well, look, we understand just how far back this whole thing was coming from. We understand, you know, the state that the club was in, how scarce sort of the operational aspect of things were. And so there was a level of tolerance, I think, or at least understanding at that point. But it does feel like over the last year that that energy, that strategy, it's been much harder to sort of, like, trace the thread, if you like, in terms of the decisions that have been made. You know, and as you said there, obviously, in terms of the stadium, there have been some announcements to address some of it and some investments coming in. And obviously that's something we should mention, because clearly there is some element of recognition behind the scenes on that. But yeah, this feels like it's been fairly a muddled answer, but I can see what you're saying. It feels like the sort of energy and intensity and the drive and the vision that, like, even when things, bad decisions were made or something got a few run of results or something, you could point to and say, well, okay, I feel like we're going through a bit of pain at the moment, but I can understand the direction. At the moment, it's a little bit like you struggle.
There's a little bit of mistrust which has developed as well, whether it's from the shareholding issue, the Black Cats bar debacle, you know, not signing a striker for so long. All of that feeds into it as well.
Yeah, totally. And I guess that's what I mean in terms of, like, again, the difference between now and at the start. And obviously there's, like, there's loads of factors in that, isn't there? Like, you know, stuff that takes a long time, sort of like the shareholding stuff, you know, that not quite what. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I do feel like, and also I feel as if, you know, those supporter minutes, the Black Hats bar stuff was a bit like, there's not really a huge amount of accountability there. And by the way, I'm not saying, like, oh, they should have said this person made this mistake and we've done this. Like, I totally understand that's not going to happen.
Maybe own it a bit better.
But also the Black Cats bar was, like, the most high profile aspect of a lot of decisions around that game and stuff that left fans feeling a bit alienated. And, you know, there was no real accountability for that, was there, or recognition of that. So I do just think it's all, I do think there's a distance that's developed now between probably the fan base and the club. Like, I don't think that's unfair or, like, you know, a hyperbolic comment. Like, I think that's fair. I think there's a distance that's developed now that's going to have to be rebuilt over the summer. And part of that's in words, and obviously part of it far more significantly is in actions.
You talk about the distance between sort of the fan base and the ownership of the club. I completely get that, but it almost seems like Mike Dodds and his playing staff are caught in the middle of that slightly. The first thing I will say is that yesterday is completely on the players and Mike Dodds. You do have to say that. We said it after the game as well. However, we talk about empowering youth a lot at Sunderland and within the club and all of that sort of stuff, but you do have to be careful not to hang people out to dry a little bit as well. And I just wonder... You know, Mike Dodds and some of the players might be sitting there thinking, like, blimey, we're all really young. We've not had much help. It's been a roller coaster of a season. And the parameters can be twisted too far sideways. And you don't really want to ruin some of these players to sort of stunt their development by overexposing them. Just thinking of someone like, you know, Ekwa Bellingham could have used a rest. You know, Mike Dodds, is this really the best thing for his development? He's going through a really tough time at the moment and long winless runs, and you know, as I say, yesterday was absolutely all on them, but I can't help but feel for them on a human level, to be honest. Yeah. People might disagree with me on that, but I just feel like they're the ones caught in the middle with decisions that have come from above, essentially.
Yeah, I definitely think that, specifically in the case of the players as well, where I'm a bit like, you know, it's kind of wrong to talk about individuals after this. Yes. Just a collective thing. But like, it was a point we made on the whistle video over on YouTube. And like, you know, Ekwa is a good example where like Ekwa didn't play very well yesterday. Like, I don't think that's unfair. I think that's just like a statement of how the game went. But it's like, I feel like I've watched quite a bit of Pierre Ekwa now, and I don't think he's going to be like a holding midfielder. I just don't think it suits like his skill set from what I've seen of him. I think he's a really talented player. I think he's got a lovely passing range. I think he's got a great left foot. Like, I think he's going to be a good player. And I just get frustrated because I'm like, how many times do we have to watch these games, you know, to see that this is just not his game? And so that's where I totally agree with you and sympathize with Dodds to an extent as well, because fundamentally, like, Dodds is facing the same issues in the same key areas of the pitch that his two predecessors faced. And arguably, because of the injuries and suspensions, at times he's had it even worse than the two. So there is a sympathy there that ultimately, while I think we're right to say that like yesterday had a different context because it was just so poor, and that there is a level of accountability on the players and coaching staff for that, you know, ultimately the threads of why it happened are ones that we've been talking about for weeks, really. You could say it was a performance that came from nowhere because they played well against Cardiff a few days earlier, and I get that argument. But it's not like any of us were sort of like absolutely stunned. How on earth have they managed to lose a game like that and so heavily? Because we have seen the signs at times. You know, obviously, you know, the injuries and suspensions have been a factor in why this team has been so young for about a month. And I think even Dodds has said publicly, look, like, we don't celebrate the team being this young and this inexperienced. Like, this is not the idea. But obviously the reason why it's gone that way is because of the transfer changes that have been made over the last two windows have changed the depth of the squad, and it's brought the average age down even further. So
even when everybody is fit, it's still a very, very young team.
Yeah, exactly. And what it means then is that you only take one or two of your senior players to get an injury or whatever, and then you are left with a young team. So, and I suppose that's one thing I would say, which I mentioned in that column that I wrote last week that I alluded to earlier, is that obviously we have seen some subtle public comments, especially from Dodds, that acknowledge that things need to change a little bit. And he has kind of said, look, the depth we've seen, it's not where it needs to be. We're not supposed to be this young. This isn't like good. We, you know, almost saying, yeah, we understand that we're not going to get promoted with a team this young and this inexperienced. But obviously, you know, it's not happened for no reason. There's been some terrible luck involved in terms of the injuries, but you know, it's something that we could have seen coming for a while as well. So, but yeah, it's like with everything, isn't it? Like yesterday, again, slightly different because it's just a level that you need to hit really that didn't happen. But you know, fundamentally, it's because of a series of decisions that were made really over pretty much, I guess, from the end of the Luton game last year.
Indeed, the other big news story today coming out of Sunderland was that the Chief Operating Officer Steve Davison is set to step down at the end of the season. I'll give the floor to you in a second, Phil, but I have really mixed feelings about this. Obviously, it's an area of the club that hasn't performed too well. Obviously, he will have to take some responsibility for that, there's no doubt, but he's working under parameters set by ownership. I also really feel for him in a sense that I feel like everything goes wrong at Steve Davison's fault when it might not necessarily have been. He's from Sunderland. He's a local person. I know that doesn't excuse any sort of sins, but just from his point of view and how he feels personally, this must have been an extremely hard period for him. What are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, the club in League One and progress Sunderland.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of, like, mixed thoughts on this. Like, I think that one thing I would say is that there's some really important stuff that Steve's done, in my opinion. I accept that it's in the football club exists to produce a first team that fans can enjoy going watching. But I do think like I feel like the club is sort of connected with the city again in a way, in terms of its key stakeholders. Like the concerts coming back is massive for the local economy. I don't think we should underestimate, and we should really praise Steve for his work that he did in getting Sunderland's women back into the Championship and building them, helping to build a platform where they could theoretically be a Super League team in the next few years. I think that's like a massive achievement and a big part of his legacy. So what I also think is that very clearly there are aspects of the off-field operation which have not been up to scratch for a prolonged period. And I do think this change has been inevitable for a while, because ultimately, as the chief operating officer, Davison is the most high-profile off-field figure, other than, of course, the actual owners themselves. And I don't think it's sustainable, really, given the issues that Sunderland have had over the last 18 months and off the back of the Newcastle United game. I think everyone's kind of felt that this was coming. I suspect Steve probably has as well, to be honest. And that's certainly not saying that the Newcastle debacle was Steve's fault. I'm just saying I feel like there's an element of inevitability. But all I can do is sort of give my impression from the time I spend around the club and the people I speak to. Not once has anyone said or suggested to me that they think that the issue has been Steve and that if Steve goes, things will get better. There's obviously things that haven't been good enough. But all I ever hear really from people I speak to is that Steve's a Sunderland fan of real integrity, real professionalism, who's kept his counsel and done his best in at times really trying circumstances. I pass that on in good faith, if you like, my understanding of what he's like to work with and what he's been behind the scenes. If things get better off the field, I don't think it'll be because Steve's gone. I think it'll be because there'll be a sustained period of investment from the very top of the club, and hopefully that happens. You know, if that doesn't happen, then things won't get better just because Steve's gone, if that makes sense. So while I do think it's probably best for all parties, because I think it was inevitable, and at some point, you know, there does need to be some change and you have to accept that. You know, I would challenge any perception that this is the thing that makes someone's off-field operation immediately better. You know, that needs to come from a little bit higher. And hopefully the stadium changes is the start of that process, and we'll look back in a year's time, 2 years' time, and say that it's in a much, much better place. But, you know, I don't see this as the waving of the magic wand, if you like. I think it's a lot more structural than that, and it's going to run a lot deeper than that, if that makes sense.
It's interesting you mentioned the talk and the narrative surrounding investment, and that really is the key thing here, isn't it? When we talk about off-field Steve Davison, Stadium of Light, Academy of Light, but then when we talk about the on-field stuff as well, investment in the playing squad. Not that I'm accusing Sunderland of not having invested in the playing squad, but there's all these different factors that come into it. Not having paid compensation for a head coach that they really would have liked at any point. So that there's all that isn't the filler. And it does feel like the proof is now in the pudding. And in terms of a great deal of Sunderland fans now think that it comes down, the bottom line is money, essentially. And I can completely understand that.
Yeah. And it is partially that, but it's also not totally that, because you also have to acknowledge that specifically on the pitch, I'm talking about here, not off the pitch, Sunderland overperformed their wage bill last year. They got promoted from League One with a wage bill that was lower than a lot of the seasons where they didn't get promoted from League One. So especially on the pitch, money is obviously only one part of the story. And that goes back to what I was before in terms of was saying before about some of the decision-making that's felt quite contradictory to not just what we've seen in previous years, but also how they want to operate. And I go back to the Mowbray decision as part of that, which makes no real sense in terms of a manager who was clearly overperforming his wage budget both last season and I suspect this season as well. Now then, if you immediately bring in someone who makes kind of sense from what you said you're going to do and immediately starts to improve those rough edges of the team and maintains the good stuff it was doing, then you go, all right, fair enough. That's another good, like, strategic decision. That's obviously not what happened. So I do think, like, off the pitch, there is just an obvious need for some TLC, which is a financial thing. The stadium, obviously, is the most obvious part of that. You know, initially, we should also, I guess, say that most of the investment went into the Academy of Light, which is something that we don't see as much. So there was undoubtedly like a huge amount of investment into the Academy of Light in the first sort of 18 months of the ownership's tenure. A lot of the Academy was sort of rebuilt, upgraded. That was because the biggest priority was seen to get the football inside right and get the club out of League One, which is probably largely right. But obviously it now needs to be followed up by catching up. And that obviously hasn't happened at anywhere near the pace that needs to have happened. So, yeah, that is more off the pitch, I think, the investment thing. On the pitch, obviously, it is also true in terms of if you need to get that head coach who's going to cost money, then you have to do it. If you need to push a little bit further to get that striker who's going to do the job, you know, then in the long run, that can be a financially excellent decision if you end up going to get promoted, doesn't it? Because then you're unlocking a level of kind of investment that is completely off the scale, really. So yeah, investment is a big part of it, especially off the pitch. Like that is definitely how I would see it. On the pitch, I would say it's partially that, but a little bit more to it than that as well.
Yeah, and I think you're dead right. And I think TLC does need to be shown to things that fans can see. I think, you know, a football club should be a beacon of pride, especially in the northeast of England and Sunderland as well. So yeah, anyway, we shall leave it there. God, Sunderland could do with a win against Bristol City this Saturday. Join us over on the Sunderland Echo website for all of the pre-match build-up. There'll be a pre-match podcast as well, Phil's columns, and all of the latest injury news. Thank you once again for listening to the Raw podcast.